in Manhattan, blocks from Ground Zero, this is Democracy Now in Exile.
Taking apart these plywoods over here, basically putting together stretches for the bodies, you know, and hopefully we'll find, you know, more houses and bedrooms, basically. You know, God bless everybody. We're getting our workers, everybody's basically volunteering.
The World Trade Center is destroyed by two hijacked commercial airliners as a third slams into the Pentagon, causing chaos around the country. Thousands are feared dead as Congress, the president, and his men beat the drums of war.
I would tell you up front, I have no intentions of discussing today what comes next, but make no mistake about it, your armed forces are ready.
All that and more coming up on Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! In Exile. I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting from downtown community television in Chinatown, just blocks from where the World Trade Center once was. Shockwaves reverberated around the world from the suicide attacks by aircraft hijackers that flattened New York City's signature World Trade Center and smashed a hole in the Pentagon. Many thousands are feared to have been killed in the attacks yesterday, which stunned the world, bringing condemnation from all sides and sowing confusion in financial markets. Rescue workers battled through the night after hijackers who seized four passenger aircraft flew two of them into the twin towers of the World Trade Center, one into the Pentagon and one into a wood in rural Pennsylvania. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but U.S. officials said the tightly coordinated operation bears the hallmarks of Osama bin Laden, the Saudi-born dissident now living in Afghanistan, who is blamed for bombing two U.S. embassies in East Africa and other anti-American attacks. There has no evidence that's been presented at this point to prove their assertions. A Pakistani newspaper, Khabrain, said bin Laden had denied blame. The terrorist act, it said, is the action of some American group. I have nothing to do with it. It quoted him as saying via sources close to the Taliban. The Taliban movement, which rules most of Afghanistan, said bin Laden could not have been involved. Western aid workers in Kabul began pulling out of the Afghan capital amid fears for their safety if the United States retaliates. A special UN flight carried some aid workers out of Kabul in the middle of the day, and United Nations said it's considering a general withdrawal of its foreign staff from the battered country. Authorities in Massachusetts have identified five Arab men as suspects in yesterday's attack on New York City and have seized a rental car containing Arabic language flight training manuals at Logan International Airport. This, according to a source being quoted by the Boston Herald newspaper. Two of the men were brothers whose passports were traced to the United Arab Emirates. This, according to an unidentified source. One of the men was a trained pilot. The paper said investigators suspect the two brothers were aboard a hijacked United Airlines Flight 175, which pilot union officials said was one of the aircraft that crashed into the World Trade Center. Now, again, have to warn all of our listeners, as these kinds of unidentified reports come out, that we have to remember what happened after the Oklahoma City bombing, when report after report came out of Arab people somewhere bearing responsibility. In the end, that was not the case. The Senate and UN House of Representatives plan to pass bipartisan resolution condemning the terrorist strikes and promising retaliation. Lawmakers also ripped into the Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI for failing to prevent the attacks. They said efforts must be improved to detect such pending operations before they're carried out. Senator Orrin Hatch, a Utah Republican, said war has been declared against the United States and said we ought to act accordingly. the capital of the United States struggled to get back on its feet today, a day after a hijacked plane slammed into the Pentagon as part of the coordinated attack. President Bush, who returned to Washington last night, said federal agencies that were shut after the attacks on the Pentagon and New York's World Trade Center will reopen for business today amid extraordinary security measures in the Capitol. Local fire authorities said up to 800 people are believed to have died when an American Airlines jetliner commandeered at Washington Dulles International Airport crashed into a newly renovated section of the massive Pentagon. Officials said the Pentagon would reopen today despite significant damage, with some personnel moved into alternate work sites. More than 20,000 civilians and military men and women work in the Pentagon, the world's biggest office building and home to the Defense Department. District of Columbia Mayor Anthony Williams declared a state of emergency in the city, and all the hospitals in the region were put on maximum alert. Most of the federal government shut down yesterday. National Guard military vehicles blocked some streets near the White House, and heavily armed police and Secret Service agents surrounded the gate leading into the Naval Observatory, the vice presidential residence, as well as the British Embassy. Military vehicles were seen rumbling through the city's streets. The attack forced the evacuation of the White House and the U.S. Capitol and drove top U.S. government officials, congressional leaders, and Supreme Court justices into safe but secret locations. The White House reopened later in the day. More than 300 firefighters in New York sent to the scene of the World Trade Center disaster are missing. This according to the head of the New York City Department, Fire Department. The firefighters were among the rescuers who were in the process of evacuating people trapped inside the Twin Towers when the buildings collapsed after being hit by two hijacked airliners. Mayor Rudolph Giuliani said the city's fire department also lost its first deputy commissioner, William Feehan, the chief of the department, as well as the chief in charge of the Special Operations Command, Raymond Downey, as well as Father Michael Judge, a chaplain. And President Bush said yesterday he would, quote, make no distinction between terrorists and their hosts in the hunt for those responsible for killing thousands in attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon.
Trying times is what the world is talking about. You've got
the World Trade Center after the first plane hit. I just saw a second plane come in from the south and hit the south tower halfway between the bottom and the top of the tower. It's got to be a terrorist attack. I can't tell you anything more than that. I saw the plane hit the building.
When a big explosion happened, some guy came out. His skin was all off. I helped him out. This is all over. There's people jumping out of windows. I've seen at least 14 people jumping out of windows. It's horrific. I can't believe this is happening.
We had our stretchers out, and we were waiting. And what you saw there was, I don't even have the words. You looked at the towers, and you saw every 30 seconds people were jumping out all over. It was devastating. And then must have been about 5 minutes later, that you heard like you hear in a movie theater in surround sound, and you saw this building just blow up, the first Trade Center, and we all ran, and I ran under a overpass. And we just laid down, and you saw two cars fly over us with boulders, and I mean, we basically said Shema, and we were dead. And there's no word how many tens and tens of thousands of people are dead here. It's like not to be believed. I was just in touch with one of our ambulances there who were just running in and back. We must have 500 members on the scene and just running in and back to the hospitals with people who are totally 80, 90% with burns on their body. I mean, whatever did something like this, it's just not to be believed.
I couldn't see the very base of the building, but it definitely blew up from under the flames. The flames were on the first maybe 20 floors, the top 20 floors. The explosion started underneath.
And what happened to your building? Were you evacuated?
Yes, we were.
This building, which is part of the World Trade Tower complex, I was told by the policeman when I was down there that the south side of this building is completely gone, and it looks exactly like the building that got blown up at Oklahoma City. And the firefighters and all the police can't do anything until this building either burns out or falls down. So there's nothing that can be done, and you know, this side of the building looks fine, but the other side of the building is gone. And so I'm waiting here to watch the building fall down.
The street. Just felt the second one. It just felt the whole building shake, and just a lot of smoke and soot, and a lot of people very, very nervous and scared. It was just like it was just the unknown. When the second building fell, you actually heard a rumbling. It sounded like another plane coming overhead because it came right off the top of our buildings and went right into the World Trade Center. So it was really pretty scary.
Which building were you in?
Right on Broadway, 115, 111.
Did you know anyone inside the World Trade Center?
A bunch of people. That's what we're trying to find out. We're in the building business, and we have a lot of friends who are over there, so we're trying to find out now.
I saw a building on fire. It just kind of to the left of where I'm standing now. I saw that fall. All of a sudden, this building unrelated to it just collapsed. I'm standing there looking right at it. It just collapsed. And then all you saw was just a big puff of black, gray, and white smoke.
If anything, emergency.
Everybody's running. I just didn't know how to move because it's just amazing. Just seeing this right before your eyes, just can't believe it. I mean, I saw the first one fall from my office in Midtown. I just had to come down here to help, do something. But it's just gone.
The building shook a couple of times, and we're in the security area. We post the cameras on the outside, and we just started seeing like a lot of debris and bodies started falling from all over everywhere. When it hit three floors above us, it locked us in. So it took a while for them to dig us out. Once they did, we was on our way down, and then that's when we saw the whole 22nd floor and everything else come down.
Taking apart these plywoods over here, basically putting together stretches for the bodies, you know, and hopefully we'll find, you know, more live ones than dead ones, basically. You know, God bless everybody. We're getting our workers, everybody's basically volunteering.
Don't get hurt, guys. Take it easy. City of New York is coming together here.
We're iron workers from Local 40. We're here to help with the cleanup, get the people out, whatever has to be done.
Okay.
And we're here to remove the steel and help out in any way we can. All the locals have sent over volunteers, Local 40, Local 361, and 580.
So you're going into the building now?
What's left of it. Hey, you still alive?
Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
The sounds of the streets of Manhattan after the largest terrorist attack in U.S. history, the collapse of the World Trade Center towers, after two commercial airliners that were hijacked slammed into them. You are listening to Democracy Now in Exile, Resistance Radio, broadcasting blocks from Ground Zero. I'm Amy Goodman, and I do believe that this broadcast that you're hearing is the closest to the attack site of any broadcast medium in this country right now. We're broadcasting from downtown community television in Chinatown. Just walking down the street last night, just a block or two away, were community residents hammering 2x4s, as you just heard in that mix, put together by reporter Miranda Kennedy. Community residents hammering 2x4s into pallets as the search and rescue operation began last night. The mayor has called for an evacuation of this entire area. The Democracy Now! Staff stayed at DCTV last night so that we would be able to bring you this broadcast. And we're joined now by John Alpert. He runs DCTV at Engine Company 31 here in Chinatown, and he is also an award-winning journalist whose footage, as he snuck in last night beyond the police and fire barriers, has appeared on the networks over the last 12 hours. Welcome to Democracy Now!, John.
Good morning.
Well, it's great to have you with us. You were able to get in last night to, well, ground zero. Tell us what you saw.
Well, I managed to ride in last night in a sanitation police car. They were delivering these stretchers further into the, basically into the war zone area. And we managed to go in with a sergeant. And once we got inside, we were able to attach ourselves to different groups of police as they marched closer and closer to the Trade Center. On the way there, the wind was really blowing, and the dust was kicking up, and I've never been at the scene of an atomic attack, but that's what it felt like, people just sitting on the sides of the street, basically their heads buried in their hands, the dust whipping through the air. It was like a moonscape. As we got closer, you began to see things that were even more disturbing. There were body parts lying underneath those traffic cones. The people didn't have time to do anything with the body parts. They just put the cone on top of it, sort of as a sort of a temporary gravestone. We saw the wheel of the airplane that had hit one of the buildings. It was lying in the curb. And then we made our way to the actual Trade Center.
The ash that is covering the whole area, as if a volcano has just erupted, gets denser, of course, as you come to the main area. How high at this point is the area of the World Trade Center? Is there any of the buildings left?
There's a pile of rubble that probably extends right at the outskirts of the Trade Center. It's flat. And there's nothing left there. There's a little bit left of the structure that probably reaches a crumbled height of about 8 or 9 stories.
We have to say a lot of the broadcasting outlets are down because their antenna were on top of the World Trade Center. John, in your footage, we see ambulances that are open, that are crushed, a lot of aid workers, a lot of the emergency workers, police, fire, ambulance, EMT people were killed as they tried to help people after the tower hadn't yet collapsed but was on fire and people were jumping from the top stories of the twin 110-story towers.
Right, and ironically, Mayor Giuliani's Command and Control Emergency Center is located not in the two trade towers, but in the smaller tower next to them. I actually know the man that's the head of that, John Odomat, and we don't know where he is. And there were many people that were called into that particular area to respond, and many of them are missing.
And as we read in the news headlines, the fire chief, the deputy chief, they have all been killed as they were coordinating the rescue efforts.
Yeah, the firemen were stunned, actually. They were standing around. The rescue effort last night was proceeding quite slowly, and many of the firemen were both dumbstruck with what had happened to them, but also a little bit frustrated because they could not go into action. I think that actually on the outskirts of the whole zone, you see more movement, vehicles being lined up. You can see the marshaling of the resources that are going to be necessary to clean and investigate and recover from this. But at the actual site, it was going very, very slowly. At one time, there was one or two ironworkers. The ironworkers were great. They were doing most of the actual work. They were running the cranes. They were doing the welding, cutting the pieces of steel so that they could be lifted away. But until they got the really big cranes in there, there were really one or two workers and thousands of firemen just standing around in silence watching this.
We've seen a lot of firemen on the side holding their heads and their hands very much in shock like everyone else yesterday. And I should let stations know throughout the day we broadcast and people were coming up. I want to thank you, John, for allowing us to broadcast from your site, from Downtown Community Television. Again, the closest site to this area. This whole area, NYC, WNYC, the NPR station, WBAI, they're all off the air from down in the Wall Street and City Hall area. I believe NPR, just AM, is broadcasting from uptown from their studios. But to be here in the evacuated zone, it's also a time of concern when people are being stopped everywhere, prevented from moving. It takes a lot of agility to get around.
Yeah, we actually started yesterday by bringing our telephones down to the street, and as people wandered up in a daze, they wanted to notify their families that they were okay. The first person that came into our building to use our phone was a fellow who worked on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. They have TV sets there on the floor, and he saw the first impact and went rushing over to the trade tower where his wife worked. And he was standing there. He managed to call his wife's phone, and he was able to get through, but all he heard was screaming. And he waited as they evacuated the building. His wife worked on the 100th floor, and they were evacuating people up to the 80th when the building collapsed. And he was just wandering around here. He didn't know what to do. He has a 2-year-old kid. He was trying to call home to tell them that he was okay, but he didn't know what happened to mommy.
John Alpert, Emmy Award-winning filmmaker, journalist who has been through the night at the World Trade Zone, at the World Trade Center.
Yeah, you know what was actually quite moving? The firemen know who's missing.
More than 280 of them.
And they find pieces of gear that belong to these men, their helmet, their coat with their names on it, and they're collecting these in a pile, and they're just sort of standing around watching this and not knowing what to do. And they all know somebody who was buried in there someplace.
And as for the number of people who are buried in the rubble right now as the slow search and rescue operation begins, the numbers are only being guessed at and feared that.
Yeah, I was standing there at the Trade Center yesterday for, I guess, about 12 hours. And during that time, only one body was brought out. And this was early. From around 6 o'clock at night to 2 o'clock in the morning, they were not able to dig deep enough into the pile to bring anybody out.
But there are a number of wounded who are filling the hospitals, and they're very desperate, the medical workers, for people to contribute blood. And I know that's happening around the country and around the city.
Yeah,
thanks, John.
Okay. The doctor who was on the scene there actually said, I feel helpless. I don't know what to do.
You're listening to Democracy Now! In Exile as we broadcast blocks away from what was the World Trade Center. When we come back, we'll be joined by Ali Abunima. He is in Chicago, his family right in the shadow of the World Trade Center, and Norman Solomon. We'll be talking about media coverage. We'll also hear from President Bush and his men. And then we'll look at the stereotypes and the blame, the fingers being pointed, and the concerns of whole populations when it is discovered who was responsible for these acts. Stay with us.
Look more, Jones. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Democracy Now in Exile, broadcasting blocks from what were the towers of the World Trade Center. Just a block to the south of us, people last night hammering away, building pallets out of 2x4s and pieces of plywood that are now going to be used in the search and rescue operation. As one of the residents said, who was hammering away, they sounded like drums, I have to say. As he was hammering away, he said, I hope these are used to bring out more people who are alive than dead. At 5:30 Eastern Standard Time, or rather 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, President Bush addressed the nation.
Good evening. Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts. The victims were in airplanes or in their offices, secretaries, businessmen and women, military and federal workers, moms and dads, friends and neighbors. Thousands of lives were suddenly ended by evil, despicable acts of terror. The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings, fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger. These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat, but they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve. America was targeted for attack because we're the brightest beacon for freedom and opportunity in the world, and no one will keep that light from shining. Today, our nation saw evil, the very worst of human nature. And we responded with the best of America, with the daring of our rescue workers, with the caring for strangers and neighbors who came to give blood and help in any way they could. Immediately following the first attack, I implemented our government's emergency response plans. Our military is powerful, and it's prepared. Our emergency teams are working in New York City and Washington, D.C., to help with local rescue efforts. Our first priority is to get help to those who have been injured and to take every precaution to protect our citizens at home and around the world from further attacks.
President Bush addressing the nation last night at 8:30. He was in Florida when the planes slammed into the World Trade Center as well as the Pentagon. He then flew on to base in Louisiana, his top security people not wanting him to return to Washington, then flew on to Nebraska, and then eventually came back to Washington, D.C. First to hold a news conference was not the president, who flew in just after this period, but the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, as well as Hugh Shelton, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Ladies and gentlemen, as the Secretary just said, today we have watched the tragedy of an outrageous act of barbaric terrorism carried out by fanatics against both civilians and military people, acts that have killed and maimed many innocent and decent citizens of our country. I extend my condolences to the entire Department of Defense families, military and civilian, and to the families of all those throughout our nation who lost loved ones. I think this is indeed a reminder of the tragedy and the tragic dangers that we face day in and day out, both here at home as well as abroad. I would tell you up front, I have no intentions of discussing today what comes next, but make no mistake about it, your armed forces are ready.
General Hugh Shelton, speaking at the Pentagon yesterday afternoon. And you are listening to Democracy Now! in Exile. We're joined by Ali Abunima, Vice President of the Arab American Action Network. He's in Chicago, though his family is in New York. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Amy.
It's good to have you with us. Can you talk about where your family lives here in New York?
Yeah, they lived in Tribeca, a short distance from the World Trade Center towers, and I had some very worrying moments, hour at least yesterday morning, when I saw the building collapse onto their neighborhood, not knowing where they are. I consider myself to be extremely fortunate that I know they're safe. They are in a hotel. They can't get back to their home at this point, but they're in a hotel inside the evacuated zone, and they're safe. And my thoughts now are just with the many, many thousands of people who don't know where their loved ones are, who are still hoping and praying that they won't hear the worst news. And the hardest thing, I think, is yet to come, Amy, when all of those missing people start to have names and faces, and we're in for some very, very tough times ahead.
I have to ask you about the coverage that we've been seeing over the last 24 hours, and what kind of reaction you're getting as Vice President of the Arab American Action Network. What's coming into you right now as discussions of who did this, is it Osama bin Laden, etc., are being speculated on in the media?
Well, we've had the worst possible reaction, Amy, and we've had the best possible reaction. The worst we've had is in terms of individuals calling us, emailing us, you know, really expressing the worst possible hatred against our community, against all Arabs indiscriminately. People have sent us emails calling for us to be exterminated. Someone wrote that she would not rest at night until she knew that every man, woman, and child Arab had been wiped off the face of the earth, and other such messages. We also received many, many messages from ordinary Americans, people that we don't know, who just wrote and called to say, we know that your community should not be scapegoated and targeted. Please don't think that all Americans think this way, and you are part of this country, and we all stand together. So that's been very encouraging as well. As far as the media goes, I think it's been mixed. On the one hand, you see a lot of the speculation. I mean, most of the major media seem to have convicted Osama bin Laden, even though there's still not one piece of hard evidence. And it's still pretty incredible to me that any known group, especially a bunch of people who, a guy who essentially lives in a cave, could pull off something this sophisticated. The fact is, we just don't know. But, you know, many have taken the decision. There are some examples which I think were very encouraging. I thought ABC's Peter Jennings last night was incredibly responsible all the way through. Senator Orrin Hatch has been making some very, I think, irresponsible comments, essentially, you know, has the case tried and convicted already. And Peter Jennings' questioning of Orrin Hatch was extremely tough, extremely skeptical. When ABC News showed these pictures of some Palestinians who had apparently been celebrating, I mean, which is a pretty awful thing to do, but he put that in context, and he said that, you know, my experience of the Middle East, this is Peter Jennings talking, my experience of the Middle East is that many, many Arabs and Palestinians will be shocked and horrified, and many of them have close ties to the United States. They live in the United States. Their families live in the United States. So there's no reason to believe that Palestinians and Arabs more generally aren't suffering just as much as we were. That was very encouraging. I felt National Public Radio, on the other hand, was more willing to engage in this kind of speculation about Osama bin Laden without the kinds of cautions which I think people still need, that A, there's no evidence, and B, even if it was Osama bin Laden, this doesn't implicate, a 1.5 billion people who are Muslims around the world. And we recall after the USS Cole bombing that Palestinians immediately were blamed for this. And so far, there's apparently no connection whatsoever to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, but that kind of speculation has been all over the place.
We're also joined on the phone by Norman Solomon, media critic on the West Coast in the Bay Area. Welcome to Democracy Now! in Exile, Norman.
Hi.
Your reaction, as you've been observing nonstop, I assume, the television networks and cable coverage of what is the worst terrorist attack on U.S. soil in history?
National television, I think, has been at its best and worst. I mean, just starting with that they're not selling, they're not putting commercials on, they're not focused on anything other than something of great importance, but also we're seeing a dissolution of any pretense, really, or at least dissolution of any reality of separation between press and state. You know, I think Aldous Huxley put it right more than half a century ago, the biggest lies are told with silence about truth. And we've had a lot of very serious silences about truth in the last 24 hours in the mass media. Obliteration of basic history, the fact that Osama bin Laden was a U.S. government guy during the 1980s in Afghanistan as he worked with guerrilla groups to oppose the Soviet occupiers. The CIA and the U.S. government loved this guy, Osama bin Laden. We have denial of other key historical realities, and I'll give an example. Somebody who was on ABC News a lot yesterday talking with Peter Jennings was Vincent Canestrero. And he was identified constantly yesterday on the screen as being part of ABC News. He had that title. And yet the viewers had no way of knowing that Vincent Canestrero, the same person, was in charge of the CIA's work with the Contras in Nicaragua during the early 1980s. He was a high CIA official. In 1984, he moved to the U.S. National Security Council. He became a key supervisor of the Mujahideen guerrillas in Afghanistan, and one can really reasonably assume from that official role that he worked closely with the buddies of Osama bin Laden. And so you have this surreal and Orwellian breach of basic conveyance of information, so that we essentially are being given the insights of a former colleague of terrorists telling us how bad terrorists are. Another extreme Orwellian descent into essential disinformation came yesterday when Colin Powell issued a statement, and I'm quoting here, Colin Powell, U.S. Secretary of State, saying, quote, "People who feel that with the destruction of buildings, with the murder of people, they can somehow achieve a political purpose," unquote. Well, of course, he was condemning those who did commit, and I think Bush is right, did commit mass murder yesterday. But the problem is that Powell's description of those people also describes himself and describes other top U.S. government officials during, for instance, the Gulf War, that catapulted Powell to great prominence because, after all, he was the military supervisor of that war 10 years ago. And what better description than to describe top U.S. officials as, quote, "people who feel that with the destruction of buildings, with the murder of people, they can somehow achieve a political purpose," unquote. After all, the Pentagon itself admitted or bragged, depending on how you look at it, that 200,000 people were killed during the several weeks of the Gulf War, not to mention at least 500,000 children or more who've been killed by the U.S.-led sanctions since then. So we're really in an Orwellian zone now in a very severe way, and what is perhaps most important, or certainly among the most important points, is that the war drums are being beat now in the mass media in the form of, quote, retaliation, unquote. We had General Shelton just saying that there's what he called barbaric terrorism that occurred yesterday. I agree with that, but unfortunately, the U.S. government with the mass media are now laying a very thick agenda out for our own forms of barbaric terrorism, which have been used before indiscriminately, as in the case of attacking a pharmaceutical plant in Sudan in what we were told was retaliation, and what we now know was an attack on a target that had nothing to do with anything that the U.S. government said it was involved with. So all in all, we're in a situation where the U.S. government is laying plans to, as it has before, implement terrorism itself by attacking civilians and others under the guise of retaliation.
Well, Norman Solomon, I want to thank you very much for being with us, as well as Ali Abunima, activist and critic of media coverage of the Middle East from Chicago. If people want to see your website, Ali, where can they go?
It's www.abunima.org, and that's abunimah.org.
And I want to let people know that you can write to us by mail at mail@democracynow.org. You can hear our coverage at wbix.org as well as webactive.com. Again, we are in the evacuation zone, blocks from the World Trade Center, what was the World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan. You are listening to Democracy Now! When we return, we'll talk about blowback, the costs and consequences of American empire. Stay with us. You're listening to Democracy Now! in Exile, broadcasting blocks from what was the World Trade Center in Manhattan. At this point, it is not clear how many people were killed in the what looks like a suicide attack yesterday. Two commercial airliners commandeered and driven into, flown into, the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center, a third commercial jetliner ramming into the Pentagon, and a fourth crashing in rural Pennsylvania. At this point, what is known is the number of people who regularly are in the World Trade Center. 50,000 people work in the complex. Overall, Each day, about 150,000 people go there, whether they're commuters because it's a transportation hub of trains and subways, or people working or tourists who come to the World Trade Centers because it is a landmark. In Washington, D.C., the Pentagon, the estimates are about 800 people killed. It is known that more than close to 400 firemen and policemen are now missing, those who went to serve as rescue and help people at the World Trade Center. Robert Knight was watching from the first plane flying into the Trade Center from an area right around the United Nations, which, like all federal buildings, was evacuated yesterday. Robert Knight, an award-winning reporter, my colleague at what was WBAI. Robert, can you talk about your experience of yesterday?
It began approximately a quarter to 9 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time when I looked out my window. I'm in a highly elevated location on the edge of the East River with a line of sight panorama that extends from the United Nations, the 59th Street Bridge to the north, to the west, the Empire State Building, and all the way south to where the World Trade Towers used to dominate the skyline. At about a quarter to, between a quarter to and 10 minutes before 9 o'clock, my reverie was disturbed by a plane that flew by. It caught my attention immediately, the same way that the lack of sound of a frozen Niagara Falls might. It flew by too close. It was too low. Airliners generally fly over the Hudson River. This one was going southbound right down the spine of Manhattan. It made me perk up and look, and it would be only a couple of minutes later that such a commercial airliner would have crashed into the northern tower of the World Trade Center. It's quite eerie. As you know, Amy, we've spent the day reporting yesterday and continue. I also have a view of the FDR Drive that was shut down to normal traffic. Only emergency police and ambulance vehicles have been shuttling up and down. All through the day, there are far too few ambulances for the numbers of people, thousands of people who will have been in the region that was struck by this absolute disaster. There's now a new phenomenon. Yesterday, I was watching police cars and buses that were recruited into service for the extraction. Now there are olive drab vehicles, part of the some 2,000 or more National Guard troops who have at last arrived in the city to assist with the search and rescue operation, along with a half dozen teams from FEMA that have come in, the so-called urban search and rescue squads. And the southbound view that I'm looking at right now continues to be dominated by what seems like a diabolically eternal cloud that replaces the height of the former World Trade Towers. One of the odd things, Amy, is the lack of things. There are no flights taking place, no helicopters, no planes stacked up at LaGuardia. There are a very few, if any, boats on the East River. It's the things that are odd which really, in a way, in addition to the thought of the many souls that have been lost, it's the things like the sunset. Yesterday, looking out to the west, the sky had a hazy yellow translucence that was caused, no doubt, by that cloud from the fires at World Trade that put so much particulates in the air that the colors became odd. At sunset, they became a strange purple and pink color, dark pink and purple colors, just as the skies did when Mount St. Helens filled the atmosphere with dust and volcanic particles.
Well, Robert, I want to thank you very much for joining us, and certainly everyone who comes out of southern Manhattan near the World Trade Center is covered with that, what can only be described as, well, volcanic ash.
Amy, did you know that it is so severe that the International Space Station cosmonauts looked down and saw it from 240 miles up?
Robert Knight speaking to us from an area around the United Nations as he looks out over the East River. And just as that sunset was taking place, Donald Rumsfeld and the military command were holding a news conference at the Pentagon. This is the Secretary of Defense.
Could you tell us what you saw?
Mr. Secretary, do you consider what happened today, both in New York and here, an act of war?
There is no question but that the attack against the United States of America today was a vicious, a well-coordinated, a massive attack against the United States of America. What words the lawyers will use to characterize it is for them.
Mr. Secretary, today we saw military planes both in New York and in Washington. How much more of a military presence will we see now that this incident has occurred for the next week?
Those kinds of decisions are made day to day. It is correct that we had aircraft flying protective missions at various places in the United States today, and they will do that as appropriate.
And that is Secretary of Defense or War Donald Rumsfeld speaking at the Pentagon late yesterday. We're joined on the phone by Chalmers Johnson, a leading scholar of Asia and U.S.-Asian relations. In his book Blowback, The Costs and Consequences of American Empire, he writes, "I believe it's past time for Americans to consider why we have created an empire, a word from which we shy away, and what the consequences of our imperial stance may be for the rest of the world and for ourselves. The byproducts of this project are likely to build up reservoirs of resentment against all Americans, tourists, students, and businessmen, as well as members of the armed forces that can have lethal results. For any empire, including an unacknowledged one, there's a kind of balance sheet that builds up over time. Military crimes, accidents, and atrocities make up only one category in the debit side of the balance sheet that the United States has been accumulating, especially since the Cold War ended." How do you think these words that you wrote years ago in your book, Blowback, Chalmers Johnson, apply to today?
Well, that's exactly what has happened. This morning's New York Times says, a day of terror. I'd have to say it was a day of revenge, a day of blowback. It reflects the loss of hope among a great many people around the world in the face of our overwhelming power. I, like everyone else, am angry, affected with despair and helplessness over the scenes in New York City. At the same time, one has to ask, why us? What have we done? That is, this issue of, they just asked Donald Rumsfeld, should we declare war? The important issue precisely is declare war on whom and over what. I believe it is imperative that we engage in some self-reflection, that we try to restore in this country some sense of diplomacy, some sense of ourselves as a model for the rest of the world rather than simply a hegemon, that we move away from our creeping, not so creeping, militarism. I fear that the unintended consequences of these events on September 11th will be more militarism. So that it's not, I'm not gratified to say that the book that was published just last year and was written as an intended warning to my fellow citizens and based on, I'm 70 years old, on my life as a student of international relations, I'm not at all pleased to see it come true, but I can't say that I'm surprised.
You write in your book, what we have freed ourselves of is any genuine consciousness of how we might look to others on this globe.
Yes. I received a message yesterday from a colleague in Okinawa. That's 38 American military bases on an island smaller than Kauai in the Hawaiian Islands. He said to me, "We didn't do it, but we're not sorry." Sorry to say, an awful lot of people around the world went to bed last night not sorry that it was time the biter was bit, that the people of America now know what a bombed city looks like, have some hint of Hiroshima. After all, we were bombing Serbia from 50,000 feet only 2 years ago, in pursuit of our particular foreign policy. So that the president vows to exact punishment for evil. Is it evil that we are talking about here? And if it is evil, who's evil? I believe we partake in it.
Chalmers Johnson, author of Blowback, The Costs and Consequences of American Empire, as you listen to Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of War, as you listen to President Bush,
yes.
What was your response?
Well, I thought they were hopeless hypocrites, I'm sorry to say. It simply is when the president speaks of the moms and dads of America who lost their lives yesterday or their friends, that's also true of moms and dads in Afghanistan, the West Bank, Okinawa, and other such places. If this did originate, and these are huge ifs, one doesn't know, there are so many potential candidates around the world for people who could have plotted this not terribly high-tech, even if well-coordinated assault, if it did originate in Afghanistan, we must also remember that we contributed to the Afghan disaster, that after the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, we then armed every known mujahideen we could find with some of the most dangerous weapons on earth, in order to give the Soviet Union their own little experience of a Vietnam-like encounter, which indeed they were defeated, but the unbelievable toll in Afghanistan of dead and refugees. This is, after all, yesterday was not the first time that the World Trade Center has been attacked. It was attacked in February 1993, also by people outraged by what had been done to their country as a plaything almost between the two superpowers. So that I guess when you say what's one's reaction as you listen to one's leaders, what we must hear at some point is some understanding of the world we live in, that we are responsible in, I mean, what have we been doing for the last 8 months except conveying to the rest of the world that we are unilateralists, that we will walk away from treaties we have signed, that we want to build a ballistic missile defense in violation of treaties that we've signed and advice of virtually all allies that we have around the world.
Chalmers Johnson, on that note, we have to wrap up. I want to thank you for being with us, author of Blowback, The Costs and Consequences of American Empire, president of the Japan Policy Research Institute, professor emeritus, University of California, San Diego. That does it for today's program. If you'd like to email us, please do. We'll be continuing our broadcast throughout the day for stations who want to stay with us. Democracy Now! In Exile, produced by Chris Abrams, Brad Simpson, and Miranda Kennedy. Anthony Sloan, our engineer. Special thanks to Kevin and Scott Gurian, as well as Chase Pearson. Thank you to the Pacifica stations, particularly KPFA and all our Pacifica affiliates. We are Pacifica. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.
You know